talk radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Good Wednesday morning to you on this very rainy morning in the Lower Mainland. My name is Robin Erickson, and I am your host for Intravenous today. On the show, I will be joined by telephone in not too long a time by one of the performers taking part in the Transform Cabaret Festival, which is unlike any other festival in the world. It focuses on empowering Indigenous artists and encouraging collaboration with non-Indigenous artists to build relationships and bring communities together that create lasting social change through groundbreaking performance. And I will have Chris Reed as one of the darlings drag join me today to talk about not only their performance at the festival, but also what it means to perform in this time of COVID and how their creative process is, but also a little bit about drag and what the performance elements of that mean to personhood. Before we get going with that, we'll also hear some music. And as I said, it's a very rainy, like coming down rain, like I haven't felt in a while today. And so has it that there is a rainfall warning, at times heavy, and rainfall amounts between 40 and 70 millimeters forecasted by Thursday morning. So we're kind of into it all day today and tomorrow, and we might even see some thunder and lightning tomorrow. Temperature's not too bad, currently sitting around 15 degrees, high of 17, and a low overnight of 13. But we're socked in for the next few days, and it's good time to pull out your raincoat and your galoshes, your wellies, and splash around in some puddles and be thankful and hope that the rain is hitting even further south of us and quelling some of the firestorm that's happening there. All right, let's have a little bit of music, and I will get my guest on the telephone, and then we'll be into it. This is a track from a band called Mysa. It's very, very short. It's called Opening Skit. And then we're going to hear a track called Non-Binary from Quentin Barnes. So you're listening to Intravenous.
Celebrate with me what I have shaped into a kind of life. I had no model. Born in Babylon, both black and woman. What did I see to be except myself? I made it up. Here on this bridge between starshine and clay. my one hand holding tight my other hand. Come celebrate with me that every day something has tried to kill me and has failed. Lucille Clifton, 1993.
Track called Non-Binary. Quentin Barnes is the artist off an album Arupa. And you're listening to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM campus and community radio from Simon Fraser University. My name's Robin Erickson, and on the telephone with me, I have one quarter of the non-binary drag performance team or collective. the darlings with me. Chris Reed is known as Continental Breakfast, and as I said, one quarter of the team. They are performing as part of the Transform Cabaret Festival, and their work challenges the boundaries of conventional drag and explores genderqueer, non-binary, and transgender experience through the use of movement, poetry, performance, art, theater, and immersive interactive installation. The Darlings have emerged as a collective, mounting four full-length installations. They've been featured in the Here For Now Dance Showcase, the Push International Performing Arts Festival, and now at the Transform Cabaret Festival. They've also created two quarantine-specific digital shows during the 2020 COVID-19 social distancing measures, which garnered more than 10,000 views online to date. Chris, hello, and welcome
Hi.
To the show.
Thank you. Thank you for that great intro, too.
You know, I copied and pasted it from some places.
It's funny when people recount, like, the past shows. It's like, oh, yeah, nice. I love the Push Festival and the quarantine shows. It's nice to hear them.
Yeah. And a good reminder of the things that you've been up to over the past while. You sound like a busy collective.
We try to stay busy. You know, drag keeps us nice and active.
Yeah. I want you to tell me, first of all, who are the Darlings and how you came into being as a group?
Okay. So I go by Continental Breakfast, and I'm one of four members, as you mentioned. The other members' names are PM, Made in China, and Rose Butch. And the collective started 2 years ago. Like September 1st, 2 years ago, was our first show we ever put on together. And a few months before that, PM had been asked to do a photo shoot with a photographer named Sean Alistair, who was working in Vancouver, is now working in Berlin, but they're a local queer photographer, and they wanted to feature a set of four people, and he ideally wanted them to be non-binary, and wanted to show some non-binary fashion and show all of our kind of drag forms that PM thought went together. So PM curated the four of us for this photo shoot, and when we were shooting, we kind of started discussing our drag and the performance environment that existed in Vancouver at the time, and like you said, the conventions of drag that existed to that point. And we realized that the club scene wasn't necessarily where some of the work we wanted to express was able to be put out. The vulnerabilities and the specifics of our gender expression and like the complexities that come with being non-binary, putting that into performance was very sensitive and delicate to us, and we wanted to perform them somewhere where people were expecting that sort of content, that subject matter, that serious, not always serious, but I guess very intimate subject matter. And we started discussing the idea of having a show with the four of us where we could specifically bring that content forward. And I think it was like 2 months after the photo shoot, we did a poster and released the event, and then we threw a show at a little rave warehouse in East Vancouver, and that's how we started out.
And as they say, it's all history now.
Yeah, I guess it's all history from that point on. It's funny thinking of now because like, the Transform Cabaret Festival, they allowed us to rehearse and shoot in the York Theater on Commercial Drive. And I don't know if you've been, but it's like a really, really gorgeous theater. And it's funny, like having all of these capabilities with lighting technicians and stage teams that are helping us so much during the production of these filmings, and having come from a place where we were like holding a spotlight for each other plugged into an extension cord that was taped to the ground in the middle of like a warehouse, it's funny to see that progression happen.
Right.
Yeah. Which I do think has also benefited us too, because it helped us think outside of that format and that convention that existed before. And now when we're in a theater format, we have those assets and those skills to improvise, but with the better access to more opportunities with lighting and design and set and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've talked a little bit about, sort of the conventions of performance and the conventions of drag. And I want to touch on what it means to be non-binary and perform in non-binary drag, and what that does to not only the conventions of performance, but also the conventions of drag performance.
Okay, so I think the common idea that people have about drag is because what we've been shown through like film and television since drag started being on television was it's cisgendered men dressed as women. That's the most common form of drag that people see, because media had taken what they thought was most digestible about this culture that existed and put it into process in major mainstream television. And I think so when people think of the conventions of drag, they see this pageantry and this glamour and this sort of vibrancy that absolutely exists on the spectrum of drag and has for a long time. But I think often the gender variant people outside of that cisgender norm of people that practice drag kind of get left behind. It was sort of the same thing with the gay rights movement. It was led by trans people, and those people are still left most vulnerable and targeted after the so-called rights movement happened. And like most things, cisgendered men were the ones that benefited from those turns in the culture. And I think the same thing has happened with drag, to be honest. The biggest platform that exists to this point for drag in mainstream media in Canada is Drag Race Canada on television. And I think that still doesn't show a huge spectrum of who practices drag, because non-binary people and trans people have been practicing drag for as long as cisgender people have. So while people do say that we're breaking the norms of these genders, I think we're actually just bringing them into a new light, because they've long existed, and these gender non-conforming people did have to pave a long way for us to be able to even practice this form freely. So I guess in a literal sense, being non-binary means not adhering to the binaries of man and woman that exist in colonial terms to describe gender. I personally like to think about it as a major freedom from those binaries, not just an aversion to them, but a freedom from them, because they do restrict people's lives so much and they don't realize. And I think when people put those same restrictions on art like drag, they're doing the same thing that they're doing to us during the day, which is trying to still categorize us into something reductive enough that they can understand, when really we're practicing drag as freely as we live from gender during the day. And the norms and the stereotypes of, male and female dress code are things that have been implemented onto us recently in history, and I think that when we take that expression and dance within it and add those colors and add the extravagance to our already non-binary existence, I think people often think it's very complex. But to us, it seems very simple, because it's just who we are. And I don't think we consciously work with that in mind when we're producing theater work or drag shows. I think we are doing the same things as most performance artists, which is telling stories and describing our experience through lived history, not through a written, curated existence. I think the gender identity is nothing new. It's just how we are choosing to tell it to people, and I think the fact that it's moved into even a theater festival like Transform, or, you know, we just did the Queer Arts Festival. I hoped for that for us, but I didn't expect for us to become able to perform for mainstream audiences like that, because often with theater goers and festival goers, they are often cisgendered and maybe have never even met someone like us. And, you know, if there was some confusion about what non-binary meant, it's like they get to see four very clear examples of what that looks like in four completely different bodies. So I guess if that answers your question.
Yeah, it certainly does. And touches a little bit on why it matters so much and who it matters to. Because that expression, as you were mentioning, is so constructed and so individual, and, you know, being able to do it and for people to see the dimensionality of it is really profound.
Yeah, I think also the relatability to it is what people find enticing. I think that after listening to our audiences, because, you know, like our first show, like people, like there was not a lot of people at our first shows, you know, people think it was just like this absolute booming success right from the beginning. But like we had never sold out a show until we traveled to another city, and we did a show in Victoria that sold out, and that was our first time selling out. And I think people assume that that's what happened in Vancouver too, because the four of us individually had a lot of success in drag locally and had traveled with our art as well. But I think the four of us together, it's a very niche concept to try to describe to people. You know, like it's a niche within a niche within a niche that we're then putting into a 1-hour show. And I think the question is, like, why does it matter? I think I can answer for the fact that it matters to me because we need to do this. Like, we need to make this work. And we do drag as our job. And sometimes, you know, your work isn't, you know, you have to manufacture some ambition to get the work done, to put it lightly. You know, like sometimes it's hard to sit down and paint your face for 3.5 hours, to go to stand in high heels for 8 hours, and, you know, and dance and perform and socialize and talk to all these people and host. And I think that we do this show because this is the work that fuels us and really is fulfilling to us, and that we're really passionate about. And I think the four of us carry such a similar message in many ways. Of course, our drag is very different, but also I think we do it out of love and out of care for our community, and showing young queer people and old queer people that they can literally be whoever they want. And I think it's what people find rare is that even if they haven't seen anyone look like us or dress like us, once we show them our stories and we perform for them and we tell them about ourselves, they then relate to us and they can feel the same experiences that we're going through, at least one per show. We try to give at least one moment to every single audience member that they will remember and they maybe will talk about later and think more about their own life and how it pertains to this non-binary and trans existence. And as far as how it matters to our audience, I think that would be a question for them. We get so much support from people, especially during this pandemic. We, like, putting out these shows has been really taxing, but also very, very rewarding. And I think that's also a reason why it matters to me personally. And I think the other darlings would say the same, that we get a lot of love for the work that we put out from a lot of queer people. And so that feels really good that some of those messages are helping people.
For sure. There's nothing like community love coming at you to make you feel like you're on top of the world, right?
Yeah, if you're ever unsure, it's like if surrounding yourself with people who are going to support what you're doing is really important.
Part of how I see your work is political, whether or not you begin at that place or not. There is a political nature to the work that you do by challenging conventions, and whether that be, you know, the conventions of personhood and the binary, or whether that's the conventions of cultural performance and what that means. How do you see the political nature of your work, or do you see your work as being political?
I think at its root, drag is so political. So that alone is kind of sets the ground for all of our work. And I think the four of us are quite political in our daily existence too. I always separate it as like my daytime existence, and then Continental is like my nighttime. Not that it always works out exactly like that, but I think in our active life, like we are, all four of us are very vocal about the political happenings in the world. And I think like we are doing lots of work outside of just doing drag. And I think that's part of being a queer artist. I think artists and activists are best friends, and I think those terms go hand in hand. And to be producing art during a time like we're living through, and it to not be political, is nonsensical. I think that people, you know, maybe don't see enough value in how political joy and love and positivity can be in queer existence right now, but that alone, queer happiness and existence is political right now. So I think while we aren't necessarily, like, we're not looking to, like, shock anyone or create this, these political statements that, you know, like, it's not, we're not trying to do anything viral here. I think we are filling rooms with people that we want to feel this experience with. You know, that's what we're trying to impact people and make them see and think maybe a little bit differently, or open their minds a bit. And I think that in turn is political. I don't love that our existence has to be political with a by no choice, but it is circumstance. And we chose to do drag, and it's still very divisive on the spectrum of like the entire world. There's a lot of mainstream acceptance of it now, but there's still a lot of complexities that people don't understand about it. And so I think that's going to be some work. I guess it is political work to do during our careers.
Yeah, and it's always, I mean, it's never really that easy sometimes to tell how you're influencing or not influencing the politics of the greater community. When you just get to do what you love.
Yeah, I think also like a large part of our group's diversity happened by accident. Like, you know, like Ray is of Japanese descent, Made in China is of Chinese descent, I'm Indigenous, PM's white, you know, and the four of us, like even that being racially diverse is political in a sense.
For sure.
Working together, holding hands and standing on stage, bowing together is an activism approach, which is, it's weird. It's not necessarily, that was never the intent, but to a lot of people that is still pushing some type of convention, when really the four of us were just friends, you know, and we all loved each other's drag. And while I think there's a you know, in the queer community that often goes unseen, like there, it's really common for huge groups of just like white cis gay men flock to each other and dominate a scene somehow in the club nightlife, when there is a huge spectrum of people still celebrating their queerness, but sometimes on the sidelines, when I don't think that's how it should be.
Right. Yeah. You're listening to Intravenous on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name's Robin, and I have Chris Reed, a.k.a. Continental Breakfast. They are one quarter of the Darlings Drag and performing at the Transform Cabaret Festival, which starts... Maybe it's already started.
Tomorrow. No, it starts tomorrow. Starts the opening bash. And our show, we are doing a one-hour film premiere on Friday at 7.
Right. And people can get tickets for the festival in general through transformcabaret.com. Festival passes are $60 for an all-access pass, $15 for single shows, $25 for single tickets for your bubble. And as you were saying, Chris, your collective performs Friday night at 7, and it'll only be live streamed once. So if listeners are piqued and their interest is curious, get on that, because it's a one time only thing.
Yeah, it's gonna be really good. I think it's a lot different from any show that we've done. I think since the climate is so hot right now, like people, well, like literally and politically, I think people are going to be enticed by what we're bringing forward. It's a very visual, visceral, primal show, a lot different than, anything they've seen from us, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm going to be in the audience on Friday night, even though I haven't seen any of your other performances, other than, a couple of things that I managed to find out online. But they weren't sort of full breath performances. So I'm quite excited.
I hope you like it. We shot it with Queer Based Media. It's a queer production company, and Maya Ritchie shot it, and it's just like, it's higher quality than anything we would have expected for ourselves. It's so pretty, and she just did such a great job. And I think, I think the festival in general is going to be really, really strong. I've seen the trailer and clips from like Quanah's performance and Kim Wardle's performances and Virago Nation and Lynx Chase, and it's just going to be an incredible, indigenous, strong festival. That's the whole concept of the festival, which makes it just like, we're really grateful to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like when people ask, like, oh, how will your work pertain to the theme of the festival? I'm like, well, it's gorgeous because, like, the theme of the festival is bringing Indigenous and non-Indigenous people together through art. And that's exactly what our group does. And we do it without meaning to, because that's just how, we, circumstance led us to each other. And I think the rest of the festival is like, does a really strong job of making sure they're teaching their audience about what's happening on these lands. And Kulemia Sparrow is the protocol leader for the festival, and she just does a really fabulous job of educating people while also entertaining them. And she's also just like stunningly beautiful. So there's a lot to look forward to. I suggest a festival pass to people. I got one.
Yeah, I have my name on a few shows for sure.
Oh, good.
I want to ask you about a couple of the online performance videos that you did online. Mm-hmm. Because they got censored from Facebook or from social media.
Yeah.
And not that I'm surprised in some instances, because social media has their ideas about how things should go. But what was your reaction to having your work shut down? And can you talk a little bit about the broader implications of censorship on individual and personal freedom of expression, and how that oppression factors?
Okay. So, well, my reaction initially when it got taken down, obviously I was like heartbroken. The whole group, we were like not doing well after. We were really, really discouraged. And I think we were discouraged by the fact that someone had reported it specifically. And we were also discouraged by the fact that the guidelines that Facebook sets up are apparently to protect young people and protect vulnerable communities from seeing things that are deemed explicit, like nudity and sex. And I think what happened a long time ago, because this censorship is nothing new, I think what happened a long time ago is those guidelines started to leak over into the queer existence in general, whether it be explicit or not. Even though we weren't naked, we weren't having sex, we weren't, you know, showing even a nipple on our broadcast, someone is able to very easily just click that they think it's inappropriate. And before investigating it, the site takes it down. Mm. And then once the site investigates it, they'll then put it back up, which they did. But by then, it was way too late. Our audience was gone. We had already shifted everyone to the Vimeo broadcast. And we realized that there was nothing that we could do. It got censored both times. And it's the easiest thing to do on a site like that. Any person that scrolled by and saw even a person in drag can be like, oh, I don't think people should be seeing this, and click censored. But what they don't realize that even though it's digital and that it's anonymous and that, you know, they can do it from their apartment, they don't realize that they're taking agency over our bodies. That's like a colonial trauma that's been happening to Indigenous people and also queer people, Black folk, Latin folk, all these people, these communities that have this colonial hold over our bodies and patriarchal hold. It all exists within misogyny. All of those ideas of ownership, the fact that they feel like they can take that upon themselves, even though there were 300 people watching at the time, they could still take that ownership of our bodies online. And they don't think about it like if we were doing a show in a theater and they came in and they unplugged the spotlight and they started shooing everyone out of the building, you know, that would be like a raid. And it's like a nightmare, you know, for a lot of queer people. The only reason those queer safe spaces exist because they have to hire security so people like that aren't allowed into those spaces. Every other venue is straight safe. Every single space, every store, every library, every school, every apartment building, every single cafe you go to is heterosexual friendly and cis friendly. But our spaces are not. You know, like we have to fight for our space, even on this site that's supposed to be the most public and accessible site in the entire world. We aren't able to do that. And that's why those queer spaces are so important. And in a pandemic, we don't have those. So we're all by ourselves at our apartments watching only what straight cis people deem safe and acceptable to be online because producers like us can't produce freely. It happens to a lot of queer organizations. And I've been throwing gay sex raves for 4 years, and you know, we've been dealing with this censorship forever. You have to control every bit of your language, every bit of your visual promotion, anything that's going to be on the internet, you have to censor your work. There's explicitness in heterosexual culture constantly. They sexualize their content constantly online, and there's no repercussions for it. But I do specifically think it's because we're queer, and that's really unfortunate.
Hmm. Yeah, I love all of the things that you just said, and you know, in the same breath, hate that I have to love what you just said because it rings so true, right? Like, and just the multi levels of unfortunateness that it houses. In terms of not being able to show up and just be who our hearts are.
Yeah, on top of literally putting in months of work, you know, like rehearsing and every single detail is worked out. Like we, you know, every single word of every song we learn to have put in that work and then twice it gets taken down. It was just like, felt impossible. And yeah, but it's unfortunately very common.
Mm-hmm.
the Queer Arts Festival had to get there in sight so that people wouldn't take it down. You know, that's why the Trans Women's Gallery Festival is ticketed, because they can't risk having invested all of this work into these artists' stories and then having them be able to just be clicked down by some online troll.
Right.
A bigot, an online bigot. That's what I want to call them. I don't want to call them like trolls. It's worse than that. Whether they meant for it to be an attack on queer people or not, it was, and that's targeted bigotry. You know, it's as simple as that. And I think people are too delicate with their wording of it, too, but that's what happened.
Which is also a good reason to support the festival and to buy your tickets and, you know, support the art that's being made and the change that the art is pointing towards, so that it does actually create the lasting social change through the groundbreaking performance that the festival is mandated and desires in the world. I desire that.
Exactly. And their motto is decolonizing the stage, and they're really trying to shift that message in that direction. And I think people need to realize that, like, it's past the point of just, like, doing land acknowledgements and saying that you're aware that, you know, we're on these lands and they're unceded and there's no treaty on these territories. It's about literally showing up with your money, unfortunately, and paying these festivals. The festivals paid us to make the work. You know, they've invested money to pay us. Ticket sales aren't on us, but ticket sales go to that festival, and that's what they're trying to do. So it's time people, like, they show up for an Indigenous organization that's putting on this digital theater festival during one of the worst political climates we've ever lived through. And, you know, like, it's $15. Like, they need, that's like a half an Uber Eats order. Like, people need to, you know, if not our show, watch one show from the festival.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't even have to be ours, but people literally need to show up for these things so that they can keep happening, because people do support white organizations constantly. All these corporations, you know, they are giving them their money directly, and it's time people start being patrons for where they actually want their art to be created, because I promise you, this is the type of organization that is doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And it sounds a bit harsh, but it's like, it's true. At this point, it's like, people have to think about redistributing their funds, and buying art is the absolute easiest way to do that. There's so many benefits to purchasing art and continuing that intake, especially in times like this. Like, people need art right now. It's really important that people financially support it, because this pandemic really turned a lot of people's lives upside down, and a lot of people it didn't really affect at all. So I think those people need to be conscious of that and help the organizations that are struggling. Not saying that the organizations are struggling, but theaters were some of the first to go and will be the last to come back as far as large gatherings go. So they need our help, and they're still creating art for people to purchase, to watch. And it's really important that people support that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think also the way that arts organizations in a lot of cases have been able to really pivot, show that the innovation within the arts community is part of how we're going to see our way through this situation, whether it's COVID or whether it's this drastic political climate that we're in. We need all the creativity and innovation that we can muster at the moment.
Yeah, and people are obsessed with art, you know, and they don't realize how much they intake, but it's like, you know, turn off the music in your apartment, don't turn on Netflix, don't open your phone so that you can see the design of the background of your phone. Like, none of that would exist without art. And, you know, when things get really horrible, that's all people are going to want. And especially new things, new work, because I've finished everything on Netflix and Disney Plus and Crave and Amazon Prime Video, you know, like anything.
Right.
It's like any streaming service, like, you run out, the tap runs out, and we need new work, and we need new queer POC work, and we need new femme voices telling us what's happening in the world, because, like, people need to listen right now. And I don't know, I think that art has never been more important. I had a big complex about doing drag during this pandemic because things were so bad, but I realized, like, it's what we do, and it's my job, and it's something that not everyone can do, but a lot of people enjoy, so I need to try and make people happy.
Cool. I'm interested in knowing what your creative process has looked like since COVID started. Do you consider yourselves an in-person bubble, or has that just come about recently? How have you navigated this?
Well, it's
as creative people,
because with the first two shows, we did it all via webcam. All of our rehearsals, like, we never met in person. We were strictly locked down. And then when we went to go produce the Queer Arts Festival show, by then the health officer said that you could then open up your bubbles to certain people. So me, PM, and Made in China were in a bubble, but Rose was not, unfortunately. So we got really good at the 6-foot dance, and, you know, we just, like, adhered to social distancing through rehearsal and performance. And if you watch the Queer Arts Festival show, if anyone watched that, it was, if you look closely, like, we never get within 6 feet of Rose, and we definitely played on that through our storytelling, and we touched on concepts of intimacy and sex through times like this, and how those temptations work, and, you know, longing and distance and yearning, all those beautiful queer I think that all kind of came up. As far as the creative process, I think, I don't know, I've had so much time to think during this pandemic, and, like, being quarantined, I feel like, you know, I did a lot of, like, reflection time, and when I do that, I usually make a lot of art at the same time. And we, as a group, did 4 shows in the span of 7 months, which we don't normally do 4 shows in a year. We usually do probably 3 shows in a year, sometimes 4. But so we've had to produce a lot, 4 completely new hours of content. Like, new shows, new numbers, costume, everything. So we've been busy. I think that, like, our creative process was out of survival, to be honest. That first show we released because the CERB did not accommodate for us for a while. And so there was no government subsidy for gig workers for the first month. We had no idea what was going to happen. So we decided to do a show instead. And that's how, you know, I bought the groceries that I lived off of for the first month of quarantine.
Right. Nothing like the mother of invention.
Yeah, it's true. And, like, you know, that's how I was paying to live before, just doing drag. And, you know, you go from doing 4 or 5 shows a week to 0, you know, that's a lot of income gone fast. And, you know, like, late night snack with PM and I, that's how, you know, we've made some, like, our rent. And all those things went right away. You know, like, parties were the first thing to go, and they'll be the last thing to come back. So, got to make it work.
Mm-hmm. your show as the Darlings Drag encompasses a bunch of different performance styles, which include theater, music, drag, burlesque, circus, comedy, and a little of everything in between. Friday night, as part of the Transform Cabaret Festival, what can your audience look forward to on Friday?
Okay. This show is really fashion heavy, very installation heavy. Rose Butch wasn't able to be a part of this piece specifically, so it was just the three of us. And I think when, you know, you take away one person from a 4-person group, you take away 3 duets, a group number, potentially 2 group numbers, and a solo from that performer that would normally be in the show. So the three of us had a lot of space and time to make up for that. So I think we were very meticulous in our visual storytelling in this show. Often with 4 people, you have, you know, we can each play all these different roles and characters and create dynamics with each other. But when it's just the three of us, I think a lot of the story is based off of that intimacy of it being just 3 of us. Mm. And while the balance of our show was, of course, affected because Rose brings such a joy and a love and, like, a light to the show and all this charisma, and they're funny and they're so smart and clever. And I think with them not being in the show, it actually steered the show in a bit of a more dark direction. I think that mixed with the fact that the three of us were feeling pretty dark because of what was going on, all the things going on in the world, I think that together created like a really, like, yeah, just a very visceral show. I think people are going to watch it and need to like sit with it for a good half hour after, because, yeah, I think we often touch on, the initial concept was going to be that we were going to do a show about life and growth, because our last show was about loss. And I think it ended up being about confinement and being trapped and feeling locked in to your life and unknowing of what's going to happen. I think that's what the show ended up being about. So,
well, we're all feeling that, aren't we?
Yeah, I think it's actually, it's definitely something that people will be able to relate to, and while also really stretching those concepts and making them quite eclectic. Like, it's a very weird show, I'm going to be honest. I did a lot of the editing, and my Richie did as well. We would just call each other and be like, this show is fucked. Oh, sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on the show, but it's quite... some of it's very jarring, very emotional. We touch on pleasantries like we normally do in the show, but like just dance on them delicately and then get back to some, I think, some pretty heavy subject matter. So I think I'm really excited for people to see it. It was a concept. Our last show was sort of like a very, it was like our pop show. It was very culture referential, and we were playing on iconography a lot and like drag centric, and I think this one is quite stripped down and a lot more about our bodies and how we're navigating what's happening right now.
Mm.
That was a very unclear answer, I'm sorry. But
yeah, no, I think people will just have to, you know, see the show.
Yeah, it's an hour, it's 14 pieces within the hour. Those are some like direct things I can say about it. Yeah, it's shot at the York. Urban Inc. and Transform funded it and produced it for us. Just, yeah, I'm really, really excited for people to see it. We put in a whole month's work at that theater getting it ready. So I think the complexities are there and people will see them, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just in the last moments of the show, what can we look forward to from the Darlings in upcoming months? What's on the burner?
We're taking a break, first of all. We're taking a couple months off. We are going to our next contract, we think, will be in February. And we'll be traveling to another city, I think. But as far as production goes, we're going to be back to our solo drag stuff, continuing those stories. And we still work together. Like, PM and I dance together all the time. And, you know, I shoot stuff for Made in China, and we work together on digital media projects. But I think the Darlings need a break after this show. We aired our Queer Arts Festival show, and then 3 days later started this one. So we didn't necessarily take a minute, and I think we want to just like take a few months, really study what we've just created and like really dissect it and go through it and try to figure out how to continue this message, because it's evolved so much from what we thought it was going to be in the first months of our inception.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So kind of a boring answer. We are taking a break, but I think it's so that our 2021 can be a very well thought out saga that'll just blow the minds of everyone in the world. And hopefully there's a new president in the United States by then.
Yeah. Well, we cross our fingers about that. Right.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I want to just remind listeners that I've been talking to Chris Reed, one of the Darlings. And the Darlings are performing at the Transform Cabaret Festival, which is produced by Urban Inc. and The Culch. You can get tickets for this online festival at transformcabaret.com. Festival passes are $60, and that's all access to the festival. $15 for single tickets, and if you were a bubble, you can get tickets for $25. That includes all of the people in your bubble. Your performance is on Friday at 7 p.m., and it will be only live streamed the one time. So,
so we're also doing an after show interview about the show with DJ Cookham, who's like my idol. So I get to meet her, which I'm really excited about. But we also get to talk to her about the show for, I think we're talking for an hour.
Okay.
So we're going to sit down, and the darlings, me, PM, and Maiden are going to be there. And DJ Cookham will be on the other side of the room, and we're going to talk about, we're going to dissect the show a bit. And she's going to ask us questions.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's also put on by the festival, same say.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Chris. I wish you the best with the show and the future of the Darlings.
Thank you so much.
I'm going to play a song to get us out of here, and then listeners will enjoy Democracy Now coming
great.
Up at 11. So,
thank you so much. It was a really great talk.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Finding it hard to differentiate are my proclivities of society, aren't they? Well, the source is irrelevant when it comes to truth, and the truth is aren't the same thing that you do. Childlike curiosity about my fate is the only thing that makes me stay. It keeps me alive. It keeps me about my fate is the